We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is not a drill. I repeat, this is not a drill. Arkansas won 2 basketball games this week, and we are so excited to talk about it with you guys.
Heck yeah.
Welcome in to another episode of 30 Minutes of Hell Podcast. I am your host, Brandon Baker, joined as always by Joey Jackson and Matt Jackson. We're brought to you by the Field of 68 Podcast Network. You can find us on YouTube, Twitter, Apple Podcasts under 30 Minutes of Hell. We've got a lot to talk about this week. I mentioned it off the top. Arkansas won a couple of games this week. Got a couple of more big games coming up. Have a chance to go 3 in a row with Vanderbilt coming to town this week, and then a big game looming against Kentucky next weekend. And then a lot of little extra stuff that we're going to get into to close the pod today. Some NBA talk, transfer portal talk, early as hell before March even starts, but we'll get into all that later. For now, let's get into it. Arkansas beat Texas A&M 78-71 earlier last week. Truthfully, just a pretty good game all around for the Hogs. One of the better games we've seen them put together, especially in SEC play. You had a lot of guys playing well, a couple of, you know, a career high scored from Mekhi Mitchell. And just, again, we've talked about it a couple times in the last few podcasts, but just consistency in the minutes that we've seen. And it kind of sucks that it came about this way, because once again in this game, there was no Brazil, no Graham, and kind of out of nowhere, there was no Minifield. I think he had a hamstring injury. And you never want to see guys injured, and there's so much talent on this team, but I wonder if some of this consistency and some of the better play we've seen has almost been addition by subtraction. And I don't mean that as the players were bad and we needed to get rid of them, as much as we had so many options that now that we have fewer options, we see more consistency and our guys are producing because of it. What do you guys think about this take about how these guys have been playing a little bit better lately?
Yeah, Brandon, like you said, I think it's definitely forcing some consistency out of the team. Against A&M, essentially, we had 7 guys hit the court outside of Devo, who played less than 7 minutes. But that's typically Muss's sweet spot, you know. He'd even talked earlier this year, you know, I play 2 little guys, I get, you know, crucified for it. I play 2 many guys, I get crucified for it. So we're kind of back into that sweet spot where we've seen Muss, you know, have success in the past. And we've talked about it on the pod, the inconsistency of minutes for guys like Blocker, who every time it seems like he hits the court, he just plays with the most effort that we've ever seen a basketball player play with in their entire life. And guys like Battle, who early on he had, you know, a couple bad games and he would get benched for a few games, and he wasn't able to build his confidence. And I just think that by having these guys forcibly having to sit out due to injuries. Again, like you said, we hate injuries. We don't like it. We don't like seeing it. But it forces some consistency out of Muss and the team. And just real quick, let's touch on how incredible of a game Blocker had with the chance at these additional minutes and the opportunity to thrive in this atmosphere. He had a plus minus of 17. And he's a guy who, in my opinion, has been one of, if not the worst victim of the undeserved inconsistency all year long. But I think that he was just a huge bright spot in that game.
Yeah, and I put out a tweet about it right after that game too, about how the first time we played A&M, he hardly played at all, and Wade Taylor lit us up for a career high 41 points. And then this game, Layden Blocker plays 23 minutes. Wade Taylor goes 3 of 12 from the field, has 4 turnovers, fouls out of the game, -9 box plus minus, only scores 11 points, and Arkansas plays one of the best games of the season. So, yep. And it's not all Layden Blocker. There's a lot of factors, but it's, you know, the numbers don't lie there.
Yeah.
And talking about that solidified rotation, we need to look at how it's allowed these key guys that we've talked about from the start to just start thriving again, like Ellis, like Battle, and Blocker. I mean, we even saw Blocker at the very early start of the season in the tournament starting, and then from then on hasn't gotten very many minutes. These guys are playing without fear now. They're not playing to not get taken out. They're playing to win a basketball game. And I think that's a difference that we've seen these past few games that we haven't seen this entire season, is these guys are playing with pure confidence that, like, hey, I may make a mistake, but I'm going to be allowed to make that mistake and stay on the court and figure it out and still play my game. So I'm really happy to see them thriving like that.
Yeah, a big benefactor of that too has been Mekhi Mitchell. And I talked about out the top that Trevin Brazil and Jalen Graham both missed this game due to injury, but them being out and a little bit of consistent play from Mekhi has really allowed him to open up his game and play free and not worry about, you know, the mistakes that he might be making. And in this game, he sets a new career high against Texas A&M one game after setting his previous career high at 21 points. In this game, he tallies 22 points, 13 rebounds, and 4 block shots, goes 10 of 12 from the free throw line, 67% from the field. He's just been on an absolute tear lately, and this game was probably the high point of it.
And, you know, he's not doing anything special. He is just playing smart basketball. He's making fantastic reads. He's reading the pick and roll extremely well. He knows when to slip and get open. He's just playing smart basketball. And Brandon, I think you've said it for weeks now. Like, we just need to play smarter and things will fall into place. And that's it. Mekhi's just taking advantage of smart play. I said last week that one of the keys, if not the biggest key to winning this game, was to get Mekhi Mitchell 20 or more minutes. Because when he plays 20 minutes, good things happen. And that was exactly the case against A&M. He had himself, if not the best night of his career against them.
Yeah, and Mekhi is, like you said, just so smart, and he reminds me with his passing of a point guard. He's just a genius when it comes to that, and his footwork in the post. I love seeing Mekhi play offense. You know, we get a lot of his defense highlights because he'll alter some shots, but my goodness, this guy is like Arkansas's Jokic this year. He is amazing at just the simple things, the little things. And it makes a huge difference when he's able to play those 20-plus minutes.
Yeah. And Tramon Mark also leads the team in scoring in this game. Scored 26 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, 1 steal, 1 block. Drew 7 fouls, goes 50% from the field. It had him just another fantastic game. And it's not even our headline because we've kind of grown used to it. And it's also really good to see other guys stepping up, guys like Blocker and Mekhi Mitchell kind of stepping up their game to go along with Mark and the things that he has been doing. But you can't talk about this game without looking at Tramon Mark's crazy stat line and seeing what he's still doing for this team night in and night out. And Arkansas did a great job of a few things in this game as a team. Number one, you got 3 guys that had 10 plus free throw attempts. And between the 3 of them, they shot 84% from the free throw line. And that is absolutely a winning formula 90% of the time if you're going to draw that many free throw attempts and hit at that high of a rate. But one thing that I thought was really cool, and I wanted to bring up a Musselman quote about this that he said after the game, Texas A&M had a lot of offensive rebounds. They still had 20 offensive rebounds, but they only converted them into 7 second chance points, which is crazy when you think about it. And they're one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the country. Musselman knew this coming into the game. And so instead of harping on his team that they can't allow any offensive rebounds, Musselman worked with his team on what to do when the other team does get some offensive rebounds, because they've done it to everybody. I mean, A&M has been a good offensive rebounding team regardless of who was on the other side of the court. So Musselman said after the game, he said, it was just as important to talk about defensive blockouts as it was to work, drill, and talk about defensive verticality off of those offensive rebounds. which is something you normally don't want to talk to your team about, as another team grabbing offensive rebounds, but we knew that was going to be very difficult to keep them off the glass. And I thought that was one of those small things that maybe sets Musselman apart at times. That kind of preparation, understanding who you're going against, and not being afraid to tell your team they're going to get offensive rebounds. What are we going to do about it? So what does that say to you guys about Musselman's coaching style and that adjustment that he kind of made for this game?
Yeah, we talked about it earlier on in the year about our team's ability to block shots, and we never really saw it impact a game as much as it did this one. I mean, as far as the stat sheet goes. And I just love how Musselman was, it seems like we've been waiting on it all year to find something to appreciate Mus for. And he finally gave us something, just showing how smart he is as a coach. And I'm interested to see how this specific, how we plan for A&M goes on with other teams, because we are not the best on the boards in any game, no matter if they're the top offensive rebounding team in the nation or worst. It seems like we still allow a lot of offensive rebounds. So I wonder if this is something he's going to keep or if he's going to change it a little bit.
Yeah, and Matt, I think you hit the nail on the head talking about, you know, this is kind of what we look for out of Mus, is you and Brandon both said it, is kind of these adjustments per game. This is the coach that we've been searching for all season. You know, Mus has always been that guy to, you know, have a halftime adjustment that changes the game, but it seemed that it's been much slower this year. And that could be a number of things. You know, I'm not putting all of the blame on Mus. It's not saying that he hasn't made any adjustments this year, because he obviously has. Starting, I think he started 13 different starting lineups this year, but it's just, this is what we've been looking for all year out of Mus, is that strategic mind, that, okay, I know this isn't going to work, so let's try something else. And not only did this affect A&M's second chance points, but it bled over into paint protection as a whole, because A&M only scored 24 points in the paint. And yeah, I think we had 8 blocks for the game, which is a good number. Mekhi had 4 of them. Chandler Lawson had 2. So it's not only like we're blocking shots, but we are altering shots in the paint. And that's not only an A&M thing. We need to have that moving forward if we want to win out the rest of the year and even give ourselves a fighting chance at winning the SEC tournament and getting a bid to the big tournament.
Yep. So Arkansas follows up this win with a resounding 15-point win over Missouri. And this was the second time they've played Missouri, the second time they've played Texas A&M, and picked up back-to-back season sweeps. So that's a positive in what has been an overall disappointing season. But great game from Arkansas against Missouri, especially at the end when they were able to pull ahead and close it out, even though Missouri kind of hung around for a while. But we can't start talking about this game without going straight to Caleb Battle. Holy cow.
Gosh, what a dude performance. Was ridiculous, wasn't he?
Unbelievable. He scores 42 points, his career high, the most by any Razorback since Rodney Clark in 2009. I think it's, what, the second time in Arkansas history that anyone scored that much in an SEC game, scored 40 points in an SEC game?
Yeah, second most ever in an SEC regular season game.
So he go, but the thing that's so impressive to me was not just that he scored 42, but that he did it within the flow of the game. He took only 15 shots.
Yeah.
Went perfect 14 of 14 from the free throw line, 0 turnovers. And he really wasn't forcing anything. Like, he had maybe 2 or 3 shots where you might not always see him take that, where he maybe forced it up a little bit, but none of them were bad looks, especially not when he got going. You know, they were looking for him. They wanted him to take those shots. So I was just so impressed with how he played overall in this game. Yeah, give me your thoughts on Caleb Battle, guys.
Well, yeah, Brandon, like you said, he hit a couple 30-footers. Like, that's typically like an oh no, oh no, oh yes. Like, thank God he hit it. But, I mean, 15 shots, 10 of those shots are threes. The fact that he's scoring 42 off 15 shots and 10 being threes is mind-boggling. 100% free throw percentage. But I love this for Battle. Big shout out to him for this incredible performance. We've said it in other episodes. His confidence has been so shot for a large part of this year. And I think that it's been due to some poor coaching decisions. You know, he had a rough couple games to start SEC play, and he got benched for a time being. You know, I think that those those games early on, and the fact that he didn't get to shoot his way out of the slump as offensive-minded players do, I think that hurts. He was never able to get into rhythm, but this was the biggest blessing, you know, that could have happened to battle in this Razorback team. He just put on the performance of a lifetime, really. I really hope that he can ride this out through the rest of the year, because I love it for him. You know, I think I claimed from our first episode that Battle was my favorite Razorback this season. So I'm glad to see him get in the zone and play as well as what he did.
And it's just great to see somebody who I really feel like Battle is bleeding Razorback. You know, yes. He wants to be here, and I love seeing that for him. And I sadly was not able to watch the game, but it was flowing through the text. So I was in the wilderness with phone service, matter of fact. So I was able to at least get some updates, and they were saying, oh my goodness, Caleb Battle. And so I was pumped up walking through the woods, but it was great to hear that we did so well, especially closing out towards the end. I was able to look at the score and see us slowly pull away. So I was happy to see that.
I'm just picturing Matt going, "Ooh, pig suey," in the middle of the woods after the win.
Calling the real hogs.
Yeah. And continuing this game, Mekhi Mitchell, once again, he didn't go for 20 for a third game in a row, but I think it was 13-6 that he put up in this game. And I love what Arkansas has continued to do with him in the pick and roll action, getting him the ball in the paint and letting him kind of make decisions, because he's shown that he's a good scorer and that he can find open shooters on the perimeter after he catches it in that short roll. So just continues to be a very strong offensive set that the Razorbacks are running. I thought it was kind of interesting that Missouri hung around for as long as they did in this game, even though they're winless in the SEC. I guess I saw a lot of frustration on the Twitter timeline, and I know that it wasn't fun when Missouri kind of came out of the second half and took a lead early in the half, but the Hogs rallied and just went on a run to end the game and finally got things going, and Caleb Battle was a huge part of that. But it's important to see that Missouri has kind of hung with several teams this year, even had Tennessee on the ropes, I think, earlier in the week before losing that game. But all in all, you know, that's basketball. It's a game of runs, and Arkansas put together a huge run to win by double digits.
Yeah.
And Devo Davis also, real quick, when I mentioned that he also had a pretty good performance quietly. Didn't have the best game last game. He's had a couple of games where he's kind of iffy and since he's been back, but he's basically been playing the power forward position since Arkansas has been forced into this small ball lineup. And he's responded by grabbing 9 boards in the last game to go along with 6 assists and some peripheral stats. So really good to see him just doing the things necessary to win, even if he's not scoring as much and still trying to let the game come to him. Though I will say I would love to see him be a little bit more aggressive when he's wide open. There was a few times he caught the ball on the perimeter and he didn't even look at the rim. And I thought that he had a pretty good look at a shot, but I get it. He's trying to do what he needs to do to win the game. I can't complain too much about what he's been doing. And we also got to see Trevin Brazil come back for 30 seconds in this game. But it was good to see him, that he's not injured, that he's been doing good with his rehab. And at this point, Musselman said after the game that he thinks that it's important to let this group keep rolling, that they found some success with the guys that they've been playing. And we talked about it at the top of this podcast. The consistency has been better for us than having too many options to go to. These guys have found something and they're winning games. You know, they're looking competitive, and being able to bring Brazil back at times and let him do his thing and compliment some of these guys is not a bad thing, but I love that Mus didn't force him into the rotation for 20 plus minutes in this game.
Yes.
And throw off everything that has been going on. You guys have any other thoughts you want to share on Brazil and this team?
No, I completely agree with you, Brandon. I'm glad that it wasn't forced. I'm honestly, give or take, I'm fine. Maybe throw him in a couple possessions to help with some paint defense with his athleticism. But I love the team that we have set right now. Honestly, we're playing well together.
Yeah, I agree with that too. Just throw him in if you see a weakness that they can attack. But other than that, just keep the consistency.
Yeah. All right, up next, Arkansas gets a chance to go 3 in a row in the SEC, a pretty good chance with Vanderbilt coming to town. I think Vanderbilt is 7-20 on the year, 2-12 in SEC play. And we're going to take one quick break right here for some ads, but we'll be right back with a full Vanderbilt preview. So we'll be right back.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, so Vanderbilt makes the trip to Fayetteville to Bud Walton Arena to play the Hogs. Arkansas is coming off of back-to-back games. This is going to be another Tuesday night game, 8 p.m. tip, SEC Network. Like I said, Vanderbilt's not got the best record. They're 2-12 in SEC play, only leading Missouri in SEC wins at this point. And this truly is just a must-win game for Arkansas. Tournament implications be damned. It doesn't matter what else is going on in the season. You can't lose to Vanderbilt at home. And that's exactly what Arkansas did the last time Vanderbilt came to Bud Walton Arena in 2022. So they're riding a two-game losing streak against the Commodores, and that's just not really acceptable. Vanderbilt has really been at the bottom of the barrel for years now in SEC basketball. So just a big game for Arkansas. You got to win it. Vanderbilt's currently riding a three-game losing streak. They've only beaten Missouri and Texas A&M, the two teams that Arkansas just beat on the season. And they're among the worst teams in the country at three-point shooting. Worse than 28% from the field. I think that drops all the way down to, or I'm sorry, worse than 28% from behind the three-point line. And that drops all the way down to 25% in away SEC games. So just an absolute must win. Cannot let Vanderbilt get hot and, you know, have a magical shooting performance. Just keep doing what you have been doing. My biggest concern in this game, honestly, is that Arkansas is feeling themselves after having two wins in a row, and they see Kentucky on the horizon in their next game. And my concern is that they overlook Vanderbilt, thinking that they've got it all figured out and they're worried about how they're going to beat Kentucky. So to me, the biggest thing here is just focusing on this game, understanding that their record doesn't matter, that you have to win it. You have to go out and play it. And we talked about that a lot in the preseason, kind of before non-conference play. There's a lot of games like that where you have big games coming up and you have to lock in and focus on this game. And I don't think this team ever really did that well in the non-conference. So it's definitely something that I'm going to be paying attention to, whether they come out awake and just ready to go in this game, because up next is Kentucky, and it's a big game against Kentucky, but there's only what, four games left on the schedule. Now you've got Vanderbilt next, Kentucky, and then you go LSU and Alabama to close it out. And the Hogs have not a 0% chance of closing on a very strong stretch here. I mean, I'm not predicting that they win all four of these next games, but they're riding two in a row. You go 2-2 or maybe even 3-1 in this last stretch, and you've maybe salvaged a little bit of what has been a pretty disappointing season. So really, really, really have to beat Vanderbilt. Can't stress it enough. I can't look ahead to Kentucky, but the team can't, but we can talk about it a little bit. So real quick, I just want to pose the question to you guys. Beyond the Vanderbilt game, Kentucky next weekend, and of course Vanderbilt might affect this depending on how we play, do you think this new and improved Arkansas squad with a little bit of consistency has what it takes to maybe steal a game against Kentucky on the road, or potentially maybe go 1-1 against Kentucky and Alabama in these last, in their last three games? Do you think they have what it takes to do this?
You know, I do. I'm a pessimist. Y'all know this. Our listeners know this. I'm not high on the Hogs this season, but given the fact that Kentucky just put up 117 points against Alabama is frightening. It's terrifying. Hogs, we've seen the Hogs play great defense in stretches. We have not seen a full game of great defense from the Razorbacks. But if we can put up 40 minutes of hell against a good Kentucky team, we can take this win. Not to mention the fact that against Missouri, we had our second most three-point field goals made in the entire year. I think our first came in our very first game against Alcorn when we hit 12 threes in that game. We hit 10 against Missouri. We had 9 against Duke. Those are our top three field goal or three-point field goal games. So if we can kind of get in a groove, I know three-point shooting is not our thing, but if we can put some points on the board and play 40 minutes of great defense, I mean, we did well against them at home. On the road is obviously a different story, but I think that we can sneak up and steal it if, you know, we do the little things right, like we saw against A&M and against Missouri.
And as always, the Hogs do like to show up for big games. So we gave Kentucky some problems last time, and now we're going to their place. But, I mean, shoot, we went to A&M's place and smoked them. So I just feel like this new team is a little bit different. And I think we do have a chance of stealing this one. And, I mean, overall, I think we still have a chance to win out. I mean, there's always a chance, and this team does look a lot better than it has been. But, of course, we still have Vanderbilt. That can definitely diminish my hopes.
Oh, yeah.
Very quickly. So let's get by them first. But I think we could steal Kentucky.
Yeah, I wanted to read a quote real fast. We're talking about this new look team and consistency and maybe and getting some wins under their belt, maybe getting a little momentum. Caleb Battle, after his 42-point performance, first of all, he was very quick to say, it only matters that we won. If I score 40 points in a loss, no one remembers it. So I thought that was kind of a cool quote from him after that big performance. But he also went on to say that he said, I think the energy in the locker room is a little different right now. It feels like everybody is on one agenda, and that's just win. Ride or die as best as we can, no matter if it's by 1 point or 20 points. We just want to win, and we understand that no win is easy in the SEC. And that just, I don't know. I know that's just talk. That's post, you know, press conference talk, but I see it. You know, we're seeing it for the first time in a long time, maybe all season, that we do kind of feel like the vibe has switched a little bit with this team. So maybe they can. Maybe they can come in and do it. And real quick, wanted to bring up a point about, Joe, you talked about the three-point shooting has improved of late, and it has absolutely. It's been a big a part of why we've been winning some games. At home against SEC teams, we're shooting about 33% from long range. That drops down to 25% in away SEC games. So that's a huge factor going to Kentucky and to Alabama. So if you can flip that script a little bit and shoot a little better on the road, you stand a pretty good chance, because we have seen improvement elsewhere. But anyway, so that's all we got for the preview for this coming week. Two big games could have some impacts on Arkansas's postseason that we're about to get into right after another quick break. But we're going to look at a couple more extra things, talk about transfer portal, NCAA tournament talk, a few more things, but we're going to take one more quick break for some ads and we will be right back. All right. So let's dive into some extra little things kind of floating around here for the Razorbacks. First of all, huge shout out to Stanley Amude. Got signed to a 2-year NBA contract after being on a 2-way deal with the Pistons. That makes now 10 Razorbacks on full-time NBA deals, plus the two guys, Ricky Council and Mason Jones, that are on 2-way deals, where they split their time between the NBA and the G League. Very happy for Stanley Amude. Really cool that he's getting to be a part of the Pistons rebuild. Super exciting for him. All right, so let's talk about NCAA tournament a little bit. Arkansas has pretty much been dead in the water for weeks now, but what happens if they win out? Mathematically speaking, what happens if Arkansas wins out right here? Let's see. They would finish pretty much tied for, what is that, like 8th in the SEC, and just based on conference wins, and they hold the tiebreaker over LSU, who they would be tied with. And I see a lot of people talking about how the SEC is an 8-bid or 9-bid conference this year, where you got to take a lot of their teams just based on how good the conference is top to bottom. And if Arkansas wins out, you get two huge quality wins at Kentucky, at Alabama, really bolsters their resume. That would put them at I think it would be 4-8 in quad 1, 1-4 in quad 2, and then a combined 13-1 in Q3 and Q4. Not the best resume, but I think you're putting pressure on the committee if you finish with that, with winning out the rest of the season. You'd finish with a record of 18-13, 9-9 in conference play. And usually I feel like 20 wins is a pretty loose metric, a loose threshold to reach the tournament. It's not set in stone, but you're pushing 20 wins if you win out and then just make a little bit of noise in the SEC tournament. Let's say hypothetically they do that and make it to the finals, or let's say they make the semifinals of the SEC tournament. They finished 21-14, made a little bit of a push, got some more quality wins. Do you guys think that's enough to get them in the tournament, or do you think they still have to win the SEC tournament to get there?
I think that it could get the nod. You know, if we went out the rest of the season, and then let's say that, I don't know if losing in the semifinals would get us there, but let's say we went out the season, we get to the finals of the SEC tournament. The committee often looks at how hot you are at the end of the season. So if we go in and win 9 of our last 10 games, including that tournament, then I think that we could get that nod. I think that we could come in as a lower seed to the tournament.
And I was thinking about this. 1 year, I think it was like three years ago, maybe 2 years ago, A&M went on like a massive hot streak and made it to the finals of the SEC tournament and then got snubbed from the NCAA tournament.
Yep.
I don't know their record. I don't know what the record was, but it would be interesting to see like how that would look towards us, because, I mean, it's happened before where a team has made it all the way there. They're on a hot streak. And then, hey, sorry, guys, you should have done this sooner. I don't know how poorly they played beforehand, though.
It's very possible that we could fall into that same situation just based on what we've done to this point in the season. Even winning out might not be enough. I mean, that's why we're having this conversation now. No one has us anywhere close to the bubble.
And we're hearing announcers say, you can't lose to a team like Arkansas, and that makes me want to bang my head against a brick wall.
I think that narrative is changing a little bit, though. You know, you kind of heard it against Missouri, but I do think that it's kind of getting to the point where they're seeing that Arkansas is heating up. I'm not saying that it's not like a cakewalk whenever you're playing Arkansas, quote-unquote, but I think that narrative is shifting just a tad.
Announcers make it seem like it should be a cakewalk, but
yeah, exactly.
We all know that we're better than where we were looking.
Yeah.
All right. One more point I wanted to bring up real quick before we finish things out. We already have our first transfer portal contact of the season, and it is before March. It's like February 20th. And before we get into that, there hasn't really been much change on the coaching rumors front with all of the stuff about Musselman seeking other jobs or anything like that. All of it's still kind of, you know, back channel talk, and this is probably this and whatever, but nothing official has come out, obviously. But with all those rumors, it does make me question, you know, if Musselman is still reaching out to these guys, is he reaching out to them on behalf of the University of Arkansas, or is he reaching out to them, do you want to come play for Eric Musselman, wherever Eric Musselman might be coaching next year? And so that could be an interesting thing to pay attention to, depending on if he does leave, how long it takes him to get to that point. You know what I mean? Like, if portal season really starts and we're contacting a lot of people, it'd be interesting to see how many of them follow Musselman if he does go somewhere else. It's crazy, though, that we're talking about portal season already this early in the season. I mean, where there's still weeks before the regular season ends. But Arkansas did. They contacted a D3 transfer named Caleb Williams. He averaged 20 points per game this season in his D3 college at McAllister, including a 51-point game where he only attempted 9 threes. So that's pretty impressive in today's game to be able to be that kind of scorer and not take that many three-pointers. Only hit 3 threes in that game. And more than likely, I think Musselman has some kind of system set up where he doesn't contact every single person that hits the portal, but if you meet a certain threshold of things, like, you know, if you're an 18-point-per-game scorer, if you did this or that, you probably are getting a message if you hit the portal. Like, he's got it kind of automated to where everyone that he could potentially have any interest in whatsoever, he's going to reach out and at least make contact. So maybe that's all this was. Maybe this has nothing to do with anything else, but it got me thinking, though, with all of the coaching rumors and stuff like that. Do you guys have any thoughts on what I've been talking about with Musk going or transfer portal season starting so early with him?
I mean, I hope it's for the University of Arkansas.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the big thing. I feel like it's all fun and games looking into the transfer portal and being like, oh yeah, cool, cool. And then when the coach leaves, all those transfers may just, well, probably will just forget about the University of Arkansas and look at wherever Muss is going. But I don't know, with everything that was going on with the Muss rumors, I feel a lot of people were just trying to push that agenda of Muss leaving a lot and made it a lot more likely than it may actually be. So I'm excited for it. I think I'm interested that it's a D3, but also not very many transfers have popped up in D1. So
right. Yeah.
Yeah, the group will definitely expand as we get, you know, closer to end of the season. But I'm not too concerned about, you know, whether or not Muss is leaving and transfers following. You know, it's way too early to concern ourselves with things like that, I think. You know, his wife came out and said that it's ridiculous to be talking about him leaving, and it could just be that those rumors are exactly what they are, is rumors. And, I don't want to throw all of our eggs into the basket of he's leaving or he's staying. We just have to play it by ear with, you know, how we approach things. Not we as in us three, but the university as a whole. But overall, I'm not concerning myself with, you know, transfers committing and then decommitting because Muss is leaving quite yet, you know.
Yeah, I don't know, Joey. I think they might value our opinion on some of this.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They should listen more.
Yeah. But
we as a state owe Musselman a lot.
He has brought a lot to the program, regardless of how it ends, or if it ends this year or goes on for a long time. But
yeah.
Real quick, though, it's going to be an interesting transfer portal season regardless, because I just had this chart pulled up, the roster tracker that I've tried to keep up with. We've got six guys that are out of eligibility that don't have the choice of coming back. So that's automatically six spots open. And then you've got Devo Davis, who almost didn't come back this year and has been off and on, you know, left the team at one point this year. Would not be shocked at all to see him not come back. You've got Trevin Brazil that has the option to come back, probably still going to try to test the NBA draft waters, if I had to guess. You've got Tremont Mark, who might test the pro waters after the great season he's had. He's probably not going to have a better season than what he's put up this year. You've got Caleb Battle, who, if he goes out and scores 40 points three more times, maybe he tries to go pro. You know what I mean? So you've got a lot of these guys that, and even guys like Bay Fall, who haven't got the minutes that he might have expected this year. Very, very likely transfer portal candidate. I haven't heard anything. That's not, you know, don't go saying Brandon said he's leaving. But if you just look at it logically, would not be shocked to see him enter the portal and look for minutes somewhere because he didn't get any here. So, I mean, that's a lot of spots that are opening up, whether or not Muss is here. So it's going to be interesting this summer regardless, but that's all we got for you guys today. We appreciate you tuning in to talk some Razorback basketball with us. We had a lot to talk about on this episode. Reminder, we're brought to you by the Field of 68 Podcast Network. You can find us on YouTube, Twitter, Apple Podcasts under 30 Minutes of Hell. I have been your host, Brandon Baker, joined as always by Joey Jackson and Matt Jackson. And as always, go Hogs.
Thanks, everyone.
We'll pig.